He had and when he did, they were already washed up. I don't care what people say. He has never faced
I forgot to tell this to G Funky, man. I think my boy Ernie has topped you out of being the biggest Canelo hater of all time, because G's been holding that title for some time, Ernie. He's been holding the Canelo hating hat and shirt for the longest time.
Look,
But I
look, G, here's
go
the thing.
ahead.
I hate Canelo as a fighter, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I hate
Cabrón.
him with all my heart. But you know what? You gotta give credit where credit's due. The dude's done very well for himself. On a personal note, I admire the kid because he's well done. He's done well with his investments. And he's taking advantage of the position that he's in, and why not? I would do the same thing.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. We just talked about Tim Tszyu and his team making a poor decision in how they're moving their kid. Canelo's team, bro, have done very well until the Bivol point. Or, and some would say Laura, some would say the Gennady Golovkin first fight. But if you look at strategically, he's made some pretty big financial and good moves. Unifying 168, like you said, you got to give the guy dues where dues are have to be given, and that's one of the big ones in the bag. But let me ask you this, Ernie. How does his legacy, how does it end? If he doesn't fight a Benavides, does he need Benavides at this point to end his legacy, or does he still walk away riding into the sunset as one of the great Mexican fighters?
I'm so happy you asked that question, B. Here it is, man.
Give it to me.
And this is what's so interesting, and it's just reality at this point, D. Look,
Grab the tissues.
Canelo
Grab
is
the tissues,
he,
G Funky. Grab the tissues. Go
Canelo has done so well for himself. He's his financial position is so great that it allows him to, basically do whatever he wants to do. But
Right.
I feel that it's gonna kind of backfire, if you will, with him, because since he knows he's able to do whatever the hell he wants, he's avoiding not fighting Benavides for $200 million, dude. $200 million, that's ridiculous.
Has that been offered
But
yet, though? Has
beyond,
anybody offered that, though?
mean, I don't think so. $200 million is a lot of damn money, but I think 150 is doable, D. I really do, especially with Turkey, being involved. But here's the thing. I think Canelo is at a point where, 150 million may not be a lot for him, and he's okay with not getting that money and not getting his ass kicked, right? And it's crazy because my thought is, if he just fights Benavides, whether he wins or loses, he seals his stamp on a legacy. And if he does not fight him, I feel that he's going to be remembered for not fighting that guy, and he's not going to be looked at the same. That's just an opinion,
The standard for us Mexicanos is very high when it comes to our fighters. I agree with you, but then I don't agree with you. G Funky, the hater of all haters of Canelo, wearing the Canelo hat, weigh on this, man. Tell me, do you agree with this? Does it hurt his legacy not fighting David Benavides Jr.?
It very well could, man. It's hard to, kind of predict and project the future, of what these guys can do. Benavidez certainly has the looks of someone who's going to have a pretty solid run before his career is over. So potentially, if Canelo fights him and possibly beats him, which a lot of people think is possible, that could be down the line. It could be a fight like, man, he fought him at the end of his career and he actually beat him, and then look what Benavidez became. Yeah, that could be a big part to Canelo's future legacy. But like you said, Dave, the rich history of Mexican boxing and the guys who we all have at the top, you know, there's that certain group of guys that are at the top of that list. One of them, what was my favorite fighter when I was growing up was Chavez Sr. And, you know, at this point in his career, he was fighting the young guys. He fought a young Costa Zoo at 140 pounds. He fought a young Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Angel Gonzalez. And I think that's what kind of separates what Canelo's doing at the end of his career and what a guy like Chavez was doing at the end of his career.
You know, I want to point out that the majority of Mexican champions and greats that we've had and witnessed in our era of time, Marco Antonio Barrera, Eric Morales, Fanito Lopez, De La Hoya, whether you believe he's, you know, Mexican or not, because I know some will argue, but he's Mexican-American, Julio Cesar Chavez, the list goes on. The only one that stands out where they say, I don't consider him great because he didn't fight this person, that person, and this person, is Juanma Marquez. Am I wrong about that? He's not really put in that list of greatness because there are fights. Even though he has the four fights with the Manny Pacquiao, the great Manny Pacquiao, but there is there's that empty slot of him facing the other great fighters that were in his division. And it makes me wonder, because look, I'm a blue collar guy. I'm a guy that works out in the streets. I work around people. I work with guys that will occasionally, what you would call them as casual fans, they will occasionally watch the sport. And I've asked them, what do you think about Canelo not fighting David Benavidez? They got no skin in the game. You know, a lot of them are football, soccer fans. Not a lot of them are boxing fans. But they've all said the same similar tone, which is, why doesn't he want to pass the torch to this Mexican guy? Why is he avoiding David Benavidez? What does he have against him? I got to ask you guys. That's a great question. Well, I can't answer that question. Go ahead.
You know, Canelo's a very, you know, he has a lot of pride, man. And when you get under his skin, he'll go out of his way to make sure that he gets to you, too. You know, I know he's had a lot of indifferences with the dad, with Benavidez Sr.
Jose Sr., yeah.
And, yeah, so, you know, and he doesn't need the money, D.
He doesn't
need the money.
He really doesn't. I mean, the guy could sit back and we could turn blue in the face and point out that he needs David Benavidez Jr. But at the same time, I'm like, does he really need him? He unified the 168 division. Would it be nice to see him end his career facing David Benavidez and tested himself of all the tests? Because even going in with Dmitry Bivol, he was the favor in that fight. Yeah. Yeah. Would he be the favor facing David Benavidez? Let me ask you that. And especially if David Benavidez blows out David Morrell Jr., where does that even up the – yeah, it's a great fight. Does it up the stakes of betting for Canelo? Could this be the Mount Everest for Canelo to finally test? Because the conversation with most boxing fans is that Canelo has faced guys that were out the door. Gennady Golovkin, well, he waited till he got old. When in reality, Canelo wasn't ready for 160. This was a guy that still was being tested in the waters by Golden Boy to move up there. But struggled with him in the first fight. I thought he won the second fight. The third fight wasn't needed. But then everybody else was kind of like, we knew he was going to beat, you know, Blojo Saunders. Billy Joe Saunders. my bad. And Smith and Plant.
Caleb Plant.
Yeah, Caleb Plant. We knew that. He was the guy to bet on.
Check this out, dude.
Go ahead.
Check this out, okay? We don't got to go too far here, you know.
We don't.
We Mexican fans, we all want to see who we hate to lose. You know, we always tuned in to watch Floyd Mayweather so that he can lose. Fucker never lost. Me as a Canelo hater, I want to see him get his ass kicked. Okay. Yeah. But you know, he has me glued to the TV wanting to watch that. Okay. Now, having said that, let me tell you one thing. I don't know if you guys analyzed it as well or not, but I'm very intrigued now to see that fight because, dude, did you see how big Berlanga looked the day of the fight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He looked bigger. He looked bigger than Benavidez.
Yeah, he looked
huge.
Big kid, but slow as shit.
But here's the thing, D. When I seen how he dominated Berlanga, only it raises my question is, can he beat Benavidez? I mean, I think it's a much more competitive fight than what I thought it was. You know,
I believe that. I mean, look, I think that's why I want. I think look, I think the minority of fans, because I know that Canelo fans, when you bring up Benavidez's name, it's like fucking putting on a devil mask, man. They freak out, right, G? Like they lose their shit. Yeah. They lose their shit, you know. Like you know, what's this guy done? But when you look, styles make fights. My thing is that Canelo's experience and him walking down Benavidez, walking down his opponents like he's done in the past, could it be effective towards a volume puncher? Now, look, I like Benavidez a lot. Kid has great talent. But the monster label, I don't know about you guys, but doesn't really fit him. He doesn't have that one punch KO. You know, I mean, knocking out David Lemieux does nothing for me. He's a volume puncher. This kid's got fast hands, but he doesn't really sit on them because he's got good feet, good footwork. You know, he moves out, in and out pretty good. But does he move that good that he's going to get away of punches from Canelo? I'm not sure. That's why I'm intrigued. That's why I want to see this fight. Because I think, like you said, Ernie, I think this is a much more competitive fight than some people believe might be. G, what do you think, man? Am I crazy?
I had the same feeling, D. Like, you know, before the Berlanga fight, I was like, dude, you know, Benavidez will make Canelo, will turn Canelo into shit, you know, in 2-3 rounds. Now it's like, no, like, and Canelo was able to take those punches, dude.
Yeah, was able to take it.
I mean, as slow as he is, he can pack a punch, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then you know, I do kind of match it up, like, you know, the fight that Benavidez had with Plant, as opposed to the fight that he had with Canelo. Obviously, Canelo dominated Plant a lot easier than, you know, Benavidez did, and that kind of puts a little bit of a question mark in my mind as well.
My opinion with that is that, because I know a lot of people use that as an example, I thought Plant had just more confidence. He just went in with one of the best fighters in the world and hang with them for almost 12 rounds. I think he went in there with a confidence builder, like, if I can hang with this guy, Canelo, I think I can hang with Benavidez. And I think he had a much better game plan facing Benavidez than he did against Canelo. And I think that's why Benavidez had a little bit more trouble. But even the size of Benavidez, G-Funky, tell me if I'm wrong, he doesn't really use that size to his advantage completely. He's not really a pressure stalker fighter. Or am I wrong?
Yeah. No, I think you hit on some good points, man. And that's what makes this matchup so fascinating. And I think this is why a lot of fans want to see it, is because, you know, people that understand styles, right? You got Canelo, who's a natural counterpuncher. And then you got Benavidez, a guy who, like you said, Dave, likes to throw a lot of volume at you. Most of the time, that's the kryptonite for both styles, right? If a guy's throwing a lot of punches, that means he's going to give the counterpuncher a lot of opportunity to counter those shots. And for the volume puncher, you know, a guy who's a counterpuncher is going to wait around, maybe throw one or two shots at you. Yeah, you can throw your 5-6 punch combinations at him, And you know, while he's waiting for a counter shot. So that's what makes the fight so fascinating, man. You know, I do think that Benavidez, he does like to hide his power with that volume. You know, he likes to, you know, get a lot of guys to get the guard up high and then try to pick his shots, go in between, go around the guards.
Sneaky. And like I said, sneaky the way he does it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he doesn't, he throws fast with volume, you know, and again, that's to just keep you busy, keep you moving, keep you burning energy all throughout the fight. It's a tough matchup, man. That's why I've been wanting this fight. I've been calling for this fight for about 3 years now, ever since he beat Caleb Plant. Hasn't happened yet. And to be quite honest, it's only because of one guy, and it's Canelo. If he's the guy that calls the shots, then, you know, he's got to just pick up the phone and make a call, and then the fight happens.
It's, you know what, man? Let me tell you guys this. Just how we're speaking of Canelo, you know, does this define his legacy facing David Benavidez? Well, guys, does this define David Benavidez's potential legacy if he doesn't get that Canelo fight? Because where does he go from here? Who can seal that where he'll be embraced by the people, the Mexican people will go like, okay, this is our guy. This is our guy. Like, who does he do it with, Ernie? If you're managing this kid and there is no Canelo, who do you guys target after?
Munguia, I guess. Munguia.
I don't think that does it, man. I don't think that would do it. I don't. I see. That's the puzzle there for both guys. I mean, Canelo's career is pretty solid. Look at the resume. You know, you could pick at it. A lot of the names on there, you could say, well, this guy was past his prime. This guy was on his way out, etc. This guy had to jump up weight. And I know a lot of Canelo fans are going to leave like crazy comments and be really upset of us breaking down his career and stuff, or breaking this down completely, talking about this fight, because it's like kryptonite to their ears for some reason. But I'll just say this. As a boxing aficionado, I just want to see good fights, man. Why is that so difficult to be talked about, Ernie? Why is that so hard nowadays, man? When you look at social media, why is that like fingers across the chalkboard to fans now? You know, I mean, we come from an era where we watched some of the greatest fighters challenge themselves. They would say, hey, Eric Morales, I want Barrera. Barrera, I want Hamed. Hamed, I want Eric Morales. De La Hoya, I want I Corte. Fernando Vargas chased De La Hoya wherever he went. None of us ever talked about, well, why should he fight him? What has he done? What has he deserved? Why has this become a trend among fight fans, giving excuses for their fighters not to face dangerous opponents?
Man, your guess is as good as mine, D. You know, I always tell my fighters, D, I always tell my fighters this, D, is that, you know, we obviously don't want to lose. You know,
right.
We never go into a fight, you know, say, oh, I want to lose. Obviously, you don't. But I always tell my fighters, you know, you have to take advantage of your losses. You got to learn from them. You got to take the risk. You got to give yourself the opportunity. If you don't, then how do you become the greatest? Or how do you become, you know, the fighter that you want to be? It's just, it just stresses me out so much, dude, because, you know, every look, there's this one kid, D. I straight up, I put the cards on the table. I told him, hey, listen, I just watched your fight. I love the way you fight. You have a very beautiful style. I would like to work with you. And he was so happy, D. He's all like, you know, just send me the contract. I'll sign it. I'll work with you. But I told him, I go, look, you have to trust in us that we're gonna give you the best fight out there for you, the best opportunity, but we cannot give you victories, dude. I'm done with that, dude. If it's like lying to a fighter, dude, how do you lie to a fighter and say, oh, you know, well, you know, we're not going to fight this guy because he's a southpaw. We're not going to fight this guy because he fought this guy and he did really good with that other. That's so stupid, dude. You know?
Yeah.
You got to, you know, this kid that I'm talking to you about, he's had three difficult fights since his debut, D, and he's done so good. He reminds me a lot of Marco Antonio Barrera.
Ooh.
We're working on his visa right now, so hopefully we'll have him in the States in the next, hopefully in the next 3 to 6 months. But
what's this kid's name?
When you keep an eye out for him. His name is Abraham Flores Perez. I made a huge mistake in his last fight, and I'll be the first one to admit it. I put him in with a supposedly soft guy because he had two other tough fights. Dude, he went to war, dude. This kid was so fucking good. They went to a draw. I'm gonna send you the video so you can check out the fight. Okay. But dude, and you know, I'm done with those type of fighters, D. If you want to fight, you're gonna fight, but you're gonna fight in competitive fights. None of this, you know, 60-40. No, we have to, we have to build these fighters, D, to where once you get them to the elite, you already know what you have. You don't want to just kind of like, you know, Bingo. Pick and choose his opponent, and then when you get to a 12-0 fighter, he doesn't know what the hell to do because you know he's way ahead of the ball game, you know.
And this is coming from a season manager / promoter, sometimes matchmaker. I know you've worked with a lot of matchmakers in the game. You know,
hey D, you know what I would like to do?
Go for it.
And I'm being very serious. I'd like to fly you and your co-host here. Mm-hmm. I like to fly you guys to my event, dude, so you guys can check out the fights. Dude, you will not regret it.
Over there, bro. Just let us know when. Fight, you know, I already have a bag packed right here. I'm ready to go. Just let me know.
Yeah.
Let's go, man.
Our next
event is December 7th.
Okay. Yeah, I'll text you about that, and then maybe we can make some arrangements. Let me ask you this. What is the biggest misconception that you hear from fight fans when they're talking about, when they're trying to play the number game for fighters? What's the biggest misconception about how to manage a fighter or how to land a fight?
God, D. I don't even know how to answer that, D.
Is this too many arms to that question?
Yes. I mean, it's unfortunate, D, because you know there's a lot of people in the boxing game that want to live off of the game, you know, and they're not real, they're not honest with the fighter all the time, because they just kind of look at their financial gain. And that's sad, you know, but it's a reality, you know. I try to be as honest as I can with the fighter. And to be honest with you, D, if the fighter doesn't have it, you have to tell them too. You know, you can't lie to a person because you're dealing with their life, man. And that's not cool, you know. If a fighter that I'm working with just doesn't have it, I'd rather just tell him and be honest with him. And then, you know, let him obviously make the decision. But I you know, like I said, if you're dealing with a person that lives off of boxing, run. That's just my take on that, you know.
Run for the hills.
They're not in it to take care of you or for your, you know, for your best interest. And like I said, it's unfortunate, but it's realistic, you know.
It happens
more often than not. And
yeah, I've always said there's just too many hands in the cookie jar in boxing, just too many, you know. And
it is.
Go ahead, G.
You know what, D? Before I forget here, you know, that, you know, that's why you have a lot of this, you know, mental issues with some of these fighters nowadays, you know,
What do you mean?
because, you know, they, yeah, like, you know, a lot of these fighters, they have a lot of, you know, mental issues because they're thrown out to the lions and they get beat up and they, you know, thinking that, you know, they're being managed right or they're, you know, they're going to be someone that they're not out to be because they're not really talented, you know? It's crazy. I'm going to tell you one quick story, Dean.
Go ahead.
And this kind of, this changed my life, to be honest with you. I had an event in León, Guanajuato about 4 years ago. And I was stressing out because I needed to fight this kid from Washington. He was flying up, he was flying down, and I didn't want to cancel his fight. We already had his tickets, blah blah blah, whatever. And so this kid, they offer him to me. Mm-hmm. He was going to be fighting at 168. The kid never fought at 154 before. He was a welterweight, but because he needed the money, he told me he would fight, and I allowed it. Okay, I allowed it. And the kid fought, and he got knocked out. Well, he got knocked down towards the end of the first round. And I'm like, dude, I gotta stop this fight. This is not cool, right? His corner was gonna send him back out, and I went to the corner. I go, are you guys fucking crazy? How are you gonna send this kid if he's practically knocked out, standing up, you know?
He's done. Yeah.
I go, no. Stop the fight. So I stopped the fight, D. The next fight started. You know, they announced the next fight. They started, and out of the corner of my eye, D, I can see the fighter. He was leaning against the wall, and as I'm looking at him, he just collapses, and he starts getting seizures and stuff. And I'm like, I felt so guilty, Dean, that I even allowed that. Never again. I will never ever do that again. And it's just kind of scary, Dean, to think that his corner was gonna let him go back out. You know.
I remember.
Yeah, I don't understand so, that, man.
I don't either, G.
It's crazy.
I was gonna bring up. I remember. I don't know if you could talk about this, Ernie, because I remember we talked about this, and it was a private conversation. If you can't, we'll edit this out. Mm-hmm. You know, but I remember one time you telling me how there are some fight camps where they will recycle a fighter. They'll have him, and mm-hmm. whenever they need him, they'll have him fight, and he could even fight two times or three times in the same day. They just change the trunk, his trunks, and they switch an ID. And in Mexico, they'll just kind of like wave him in. Okay, you know, can you talk a little bit about that, man? That kind of stuff you've seen happen.
It happens, D. I mean, unfortunately, you know, what's crazy is that a lot of people, they rely on BoxRec, you know, to look at the opponents and whatnot. But, dude, I don't want to throw a stupid number out there, but I'd like to say that it's a high number. A lot of those records out there, they're fake, dude.
Right.
They're fake, and not just fake, but, you know, there's fight. I know fighters that have fought twice in one day. You know, it happens. Boxing is just cruel, man. It's a cruel, you know, boxing is the only sport where you can go to, you know, to the freeway and get a homeless person and put them inside the ring. Jesus. How does that happen? That's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane. And it happens. It happens, but
that's it. You know, we talk so much about repairing this sport, How can we fix this sport? Do we get rid of the alphabet gang? Do we try to get, you know, the Ali Act revised? Do we put a union in boxing? What can we do? And me and G-Funk had this great conversation earlier today about what can we do? And I was, you know, I tend to sit back and daydream about that. I'll play with it in my head, like what change can we make in the sport to make it more healthy? You know, and it always brings me back to Larry Merchant saying, nothing can save boxing from boxing itself. And I hear these stories from you, and you're not the first person that told me these stories, you know, behind the scenes. I've witnessed and talked to, went to gyms, and, you know, a lot of fight fans that only pound their chest when their favorite fighter is fighting, but don't understand the struggle of other fighters, of what, you know, the gym wars, the managers, the trainers. Like, trainers, they're the last guys to get paid in this business, and a lot of times they don't get paid. I'm going to ask you this. And just as against your own interest, what I'm about to ask you, but I hopefully you can give me an answer to this. How do you fix this sport, boxing? How do you fix this? How do you fix this where we can't go onto the freeway and grab a homeless and put him in the ring to fight?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I don't even know how to begin to answer that question, D, because there really isn't any type of solution to it. Because, I mean, the only thing that comes to mind is, you know, the commissions have to take, you know, control of the type of fighter that is going up into, you know, up to fight. I don't know if you recall, I think it was Sinesta Estrada. I don't remember her.
Anissa Estrada with that girl.
She had a terrible mismatch during the pandemic. Yeah.
That I was so upset that night, dude, because I witnessed it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how does you want me to tell you a funny story, dude?
Go for it.
You're gonna laugh at this moment. So check this out. I think I told you the story before, D, but so I'm in my living room watching boxing. Go figure, right? Watching boxing. And I get a phone call, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the other end of the phone call is Robert Diaz. Remember Robert Diaz from Golden Boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he calls me, tells me, Ernesto, I desperately need a 135. And with Robert, dude, you could never make mistakes because he would always get upset if you, like, canceled or something went wrong. Like, I always wanted to be on point with Robert, you know.
Right, be on your A game.
So the first thing that I told Robert that that day, I said, hey, listen, Robert, I got a guy who called me today from Detroit, who's a 130 fighter looking for a fight. He's all, send me the information, right? I don't recall his record, D, to be honest with you. But I think he already had some fights already, right? So then, you know, he goes, well, you know, the weigh-ins are tomorrow. He needs to get on a flight in like an hour. And like, okay, I'll call him. And, you know, long story short, I call him. I tell him, I send him the ticket information. He misses his flight, and we got to rebook his flight. And I told him, look, I don't have time anymore. I'm just gonna send you the flight. I'll meet you at the airport. I'll meet you over there. As soon as you get there, call me, and I'll take you to the hotel, and we'll have the weigh-ins like 2-3 hours later, right? D, I'm at the airport, and I'm looking for the fighter, okay? And there's this dude dressed like a freaking hobo right? And with a, you know, backpack and a skate in the back of his backpack, and smoking, you know, chain smoker. And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, dude, like, but I'm looking at the fighter, but I'm not thinking he's the fighter. I'm right. looking at this guy go back and forth, back and forth, and I'm dialing him, and he's not answering, right? So then, you know, he leans back against the corner, and he turns on a cigarette, and he happens to grab his cell phone, and I dial at the same time, and I see this motherfucker answering the phone. Oh, and I'm looking at him like, I'm like, no way. Like, no, like this can't be real, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at him, and he answers, dude, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna tell Robert, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I'm like, not there and then. The fight's at 135 pounds. He was debuting against Tanahera.
Oh.
I don't know if you recall that name.
Yeah, I do.
I don't even know if he's still boxing. Anyways, check this out, dude.
Uh-huh.
So we get back to the hotel. The fight's at 135. I'm looking at this dude. This guy's, you know, he's way overweight. So I get him on the scale, and he's 149 pounds.
Oh, jeez.
I'm like, dude. Like,
I'm like, and the fight's at 135, so he's 11 pounds over. Wow.
Yeah, I go, you know what? I go, fucking get naked right now, and I'm putting you on the tub, and I'm going to put you in the hottest water, you know, so I can, you know, dehydrate his ass, right?
Right.
Dude, I'm dehydrating. He's losing pounds like crazy, dude. But this guy, he's already ready to just pass out, right? And I go, well, you're going to make the damn way because you, you know, you can't do this crap to me, you know?
Right.
You made me commit. Now you're going to do it. He's like, no, like, oh, please. He was hurting. Anyway, long story short, D. He didn't make weight. We went to the weigh-ins. I think Robert was cool enough to not fine him, or they didn't take any money from him. I think he was able to fight like at 138 pounds. I dropped him like 10 pounds in like 3 hours. But dude, as he's dressing, you know, from the shower, I'm looking at this dude and I'm like, dude, do you even know how to box? Can you show me your stance? Right? Dude, he shows me his stance. Oh my God, dude. His stance was like, check this out. His stance was like this, like both his hands, it's like over here.
Like he's flexing his arms.
And, yeah, funny. you know, have you ever watched that movie, Bean? The movie Bean, when he messes up the Whistler's mother painting, the way the guy looks at him, like he's all like, what the hell? Like he was like, just, it was me when he said, and like, I'm like, holy mother of God, this is not going to end well. You know?
You know what I thought you were going
to
tell me?
So then we get to the,
you know what I thought, hold on, before I lose my train of thought, you know what I thought you were going to tell me? I thought you were going to tell me that that was what? Ricardo Mayorga that you were picking up. You know, the whole chain smoking thing and all that, being overweight. I'm like, is he talking about Ricardo Mayorga's love child here? But go ahead, continue.
No. Check this out, dude. So we get to the fights, right?
Uh-huh.
And this guy's got no corner. Like, I'm not going to be in his corner, dude. I was like, dude, I can't be in that corner. That's crazy, right?
Right, you're embarrassed.
And so they nicknamed Robert Diaz nicknamed him Harry Potter. And so anyway, so the fight starts, right? And it's at the Bellagio Theater. And I don't know if you've been there, D, but you know, it's a very small venue.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the fight starts, he gets knocked the fight ends very bad. You know, he gets knocked out. And I can hear the fans yelling, who the fuck did that matchmaking? And I'm, I was like, dude, that was instant. And you know what, dude? It was so embarrassing, Dean, that if you go to YouTube and look up that fight, they won't show the result.
Oh wow!
Because it was just so bad. It was so bad.
You know,
I remember Robert Garcia. He was just like shaking his head, like, "Man, this is unbelievable." But sometimes desperate calls, call for desperate measures. I warned Robert, that I didn't know who the guy was, and sure enough, it was the worst freaking fighter that I could ever pick, dude. It was crazy, man.
You know what I've learned?
Stories, man.
You know what I've learned? Hearing stories from you and everybody else that's in the boxing business, even my co-host G Funky, is I think you guys love chaos, man. You got to be in love a little bit with a chaos because, G Funky, he's as well as done some management and matchmaking here. He's told me, he's like, I've called him and he's like, bro, I can't talk right now. I got to do this. He's doing like a million to 2 million things all at once to get things rolling and stuff. And then listening to your story, I'm like, I think you got to be in love with a little bit of chaos because everybody in boxing is always, it always starts with the last minute. I've noticed that. It's always the last minute with the start of a story when somebody's going to tell me something that happened to them in the state of boxing.
Yeah. No, it's the stories that you hear, when you think you've seen it all in boxing, then something new comes up. You're like, dude, that's crazy. Like, you know, one of the craziest stuff that I've seen, that one fighter that walked away after going inside the ring. You remember that on PBC?
Oh yes, that was against. Yeah.
You don't remember that?
Yes, yes.
Heavyweight.
Oh, it was against.
I think his name was Harper. His last name.
Harper, but it was against.
It was against Efe Ajaba.
Ajaba. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was something new.
I wasn't at the fights, but I was at the weigh-ins. And I remember I was like, "Oh, I want to watch this fight."
Yeah.
And I'm watching it and I see the guy walk and I'm like, "What the hell? That's insane, dude. I had never witnessed that." And then a week before, D, I had gone to a weigh-ins as well. And there was going to be a really good fight. I forget the matchup, but they did the weigh-ins and everything, and then the next day the guy never showed up. He just didn't show up.
I'm telling you, man, you gotta love chaos. That's the only way anybody wanting to work in this business called boxing, man. But I'm gonna leave the last question for G Funky because we got to get going. G, is there anything else you want to ask Ernie here while we have him?
No, this is, I'm the type of person, man, when I speak to someone that has this kind of experience in boxing, I just like to really soak it all in, man. And some of the stories you've been telling me, they've been fantastic. I mean, I'm sure this could go on for hours and hours of some of the stuff that you've been through. But that's how I learned, back 20 plus years ago when I first walked into a gym with some of my cousins who actually had professional fights. That's how I learned a lot. I listened to the trainers, saw my friends and my cousins training, and I learned about certain things. And that's how I kind of started my channel, doing predictions and breaking down fights and stuff like that. So I really enjoy sitting back, listening to the great stories, man, that you've told tonight. And definitely look forward to doing this again, so we could hear some more.
I know I've always tried to get you on, and our schedule's been—it's always crazy. We're always like missing each other about doing this, man. But this was great, and we got to do this again, bro. And more than often, than especially tonight. I mean, we did like an hour and a half. Doesn't even feel like it. It just zoomed past us and stuff. But all right, brother. I want to thank you, otra vez, man, for coming on and chopping it up with us here on Leaving the Ring, bro. It's much, much appreciated. And it's been long overdue to get us all to speak about boxing here, man. It was fun. A lot of fun, bro.
Man, I really appreciate the time, man. Thank you guys for having me. And you know, D, that I'm always here for whatever you need, not only in the business but in the personal
absolutely
level. D, you know that much love for you, brother. So,
absolutely, bro. I appreciate that.
And I'm serious about the fights out in León. You guys are more than welcome to come. If you guys are serious and wanting to go out there, I'll book your flights, and you know, we can go grab a beer and watch some fights, and you know, talk about some more crazy stories out there.
I know someone that trains out there, James Gogi, Coach James Gogi. His fighter that trains there in that high elevation that they have, was sparring with his prospect who just fought Floyd Schofield on the Golden Boy show that had just happened this weekend. So, yeah, he's saying that the scene out there is really, really hot.
It is. I'm telling you guys, man, I've been doing this for a long time now, and I have never, ever come across those competitive fights like they have them in León, man. It is dogfights, man. It's awesome. So, you know, hopefully you guys can come out.
Yeah.
Just let me know, D.
Yeah.
The next show, like I said, is December 7th. We'll keep in touch.
All right, okay? Brother. Thank you, man. Thank you again. I appreciate it, brother.
Thanks a lot, man.
Take it easy.
All right.
Bye-bye.